I'm Jason Mundock, and this is Around the Wood Stove. Brooklyn, New York's Barnaby Bright visited Lancaster on May 1st, 2010, to perform at a sold-out Wood Stove House concert. The husband and wife duo Nathan and Rebecca Bliss create a very unique indie folk sound, mixing a variety of instruments like guitar, banjo, ukulele, harmonium, and clarinet. All as a backdrop to Becky's smooth and powerful voice and Nathan's warm harmonies. Learn more about Barnaby Bright at barnabybright.com. That's BarnabyBright.com. Or visit myspace.com/BarnabyBright. Joining me in the Wood Stove House is Barnaby Bright, all the way from Brooklyn, New York. Welcome to Lancaster. Have you been to Lancaster before?
Actually, yes. Someone just informed me on Facebook today that in college, I came to Lancaster in a choir and sang, but I don't really have a memory of it. It was very fast, but I didn't get to see any of it like I did this time.
Nathan?
No, I did spend my childhood years in Philly.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. But I didn't spend any time.
Never came out here, Dutch Wonderland, none of that stuff.
Well, I do remember going on some trips. It could have been. I mean, remember.
Maybe a field trip.
Is this Amish country?
Yes.
Are we in Amish? Then yes, I've been out here somewhere around here. We would come on some weekends, and my dad would drive us out here.
Yeah, sort of the eastern part of the county
yeah.
is very Amish, and so you probably stopped before you actually made
yeah.
it to
really cool.
Lancaster. Yeah.
But it's beautiful out here, and it's just great mm-hmm. to get out of New York City, which is,
yeah. open space and green.
Fresh air.
Well, you've been doing a lot of house concerts. I saw on your schedule. It's almost like it's like a house concert tour.
yeah.
And in some places pretty close to here in Northern Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
What's it been like playing this consecutive house concert shows, and sort of how do they differ from one another?
It's been fantastic. You know, in New York City, when we play, it's great. You know, you're at the clubs or whatever, but you don't get paid unless you sell CDs generally. And you're in a bar, and it's really nice to be invited into someone's home and make money. And the people have been incredibly warm and, you know, providing meals for us. And it's a very hospitable, welcoming environment. And also in New York, you know, you usually play like a 45-minute set. That's kind of
right.
That's usually the limit. And most house concerts, you get to play at least an hour or two, which is also really great. We love it.
And the best part is people who seem to do these are really nice, cool people like yourself, Jason.
Oh, thank you.
And we just get to meet these wonderful people who are so supportive. And if it weren't for this network, you know, what would we do with the collapse of the record industry? There's no money. There's no one to come along and help and support. And, mm-hmm. you know, this makes sense that we can do small tours and make sense financially this mm-hmm. way. And it's just been a godsend. It's great.
Yeah, house concerts seem to be one of these sort of bastions of like a really appreciative. I know that in Nashville and towns like that, there's still listening rooms, but in places like here, where you know there's a few bars that support live music and original live music, but it's still not a listening room kind of environment.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
we have found with the acts that we've had coming through here and playing the Wood Stove House Concert Series, that everybody says it's just so wonderful because people are listening,
yeah.
hearing the words, you know, that you're singing, and mm-hmm. you know, some people who have humorous music, you know, or little nuances, people pick that up in
right.
this kind of environment.
Absolutely.
Well, we got to start playing cover bars in Kansas City, so
wow.
a kind listening room is
yeah.
really, really
how
appreciated.
Long, how long have you all been in New York City then?
A little over four years, yeah.
And you're still there, so I guess
yeah,
that's
yeah.
good, it's good stuff.
It's, yeah. it's working
it's
out.
Taking care of us so far.
As long as it keeps working out, we're staying.
Yeah.
Knocking my door, begging my weakness. I'm holding my breath. Down on the floor, begging for reasons. And telling myself.
How did Barnaby Bright happen? What's the genesis of the group?
It started out in Kansas City, with a different group of people, and then Becky came in as the lead singer, replacing me, which I was heartbroken. No, we were very grateful and very lucky to have her, and then it kind of took a little break as we transplanted ourselves, and then. We started up again in New York City, and we tried to come up with a different name. Thought about calling it Becky Bliss. You know, it's such a great name.
It's a fantastic name.
Yeah.
It's lovely.
I was so into that.
But Becky didn't want that for, you know, There's a lot of, I guess, people just using their names. I don't know. I guess it's a different signal you send when you have...
Absolutely.
Then it's just all about you. I don't want that. Our music is about us together.
Is it primarily the two of you as the core, or did you actually transplant an entire band from Kansas City?
No, just pretty much ourselves. But when we play in New York City, you know, when we tour, it's just the two of us. You can't afford to really take a band on tour unless you have backing. But in New York City, like when we do the living room shows, which is a really big, great room, we have like an 8-piece band. There's a string section, you know, bass, drums, the whole thing. It's really fun.
Well, I've seen some videos on YouTube and. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it would be tough to get that kind of setup into a house.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Unless you've got I don't know what size of places you've been playing, but
yeah.
Yeah. So the duo thing really seems to work out well for us. I mean, we've always been the primary songwriters. And
sure.
So,
mm-hmm.
So whenever we can add friends, we love to. But
plus, you have it's an easier travel. It's easier scheduling.
Yeah.
You can do it in a car rather than a band.
Exactly.
It makes a lot of sense for us.
Good seats, you're together on the concrete by the river. Tell a story, sing a legend. Mine is boring, take possession.
The debut album, Wake the Hero, getting a lot of spins around here lately. Can you tell us about the process of recording that album? The strings are beautiful, by the way, and I wasn't sure if
Nathan
you had...
Nathan did all the arranging for that.
Oh, fantastic. I wasn't sure if you had... Well, now you were saying you have a string section you perform with live, mm-hmm. so that's all... Are these the same folks who did the record?
It was just one. It was two string players that did the record, and we just had them overdub the wonderful convenience of modern recording technology.
That's fantastic, yeah.
So it was just a cellist, Sasha Groschon, and our violinist, Carolyn Pook, who are both amazing musicians, and it's just great to work with. And I'd like to have an idea what we want the arrangements to be, but to also sort of give them a chart and let them kind of improvise a few times, because you always get stuff that you never would have thought of that really fits their voice, their way of playing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then you can go back later and kind of cut and snip and edit. And so some of those string arrangements came about through improvisation, and some were kind of thought out or in combination of the two.
Where did you record it?
The drums we did at SSLI in Long Island, because that exceeded our humble input limitation in our home studio. So we did the drums and the bass at this big studio in Long Island, and the rest we did in our apartment.
Wow.
Yeah.
It sounds absolutely amazing.
A lot of the credit for that goes to our mixing engineer, Brian Cook, who's in Los Angeles. And
amazing.
Yeah. He's like a... He was a hero of ours. We didn't know him. He mixed one of our favorite records by Inara George called All Rise, which came out 2006, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And a beautiful record. And as we went in to make our record, we're like, what do we want this to sound like? And that was it. And said, well, who mixed this? Brian Cook? Well, let's call him. And sure enough, he said, sure, yeah, I'll do it for you guys. Yeah, I like the music. And he gave us the indie rate, not the you're signed to a label rate, which is really great.
Because he's, you know, he works with Beck and like serious musicians.
Yeah, but he's assisting with Nigel Godrick right now on a lot of stuff. You know, the guy who produces Radiohead and mm-hmm. Paul McCartney. Mm-hmm. So he's the top of the game out there, and so we're really lucky to have had him mix our record.
Absolutely. It really sounds amazing. I never would have guessed that you did a lot of the tracking in the home.
We did on the most expensive mic we have is a $300 AKG C3000 piece of junk, which this mic right here is much better than
Nathan's
our vocal mic.
Nathan's also a great engineer, though, so don't sell yourself short.
No, just get a clean signal, no distortion, and send it to the guys who know what they're doing.
That's absolutely. Did you do a lot of recording prior to the record, a lot of home recording?
Well, I went to this recording engineering program for a year in Arizona at the Conservatory for the Recording Arts. Mm-hmm. So I had no idea between a guitar cable and a mic cable when I went into that school. And I needed that training because I come from a jazz background and
right.
no technology at all.
Yeah, yeah.
So I need to kind of catch up. Said, well, I don't want to do jazz. I want to do this. And recording is a big part of this. Mm-hmm. How does this work? So I went to school to learn a little bit how to do it.
We never knew the trouble down the road. We just hit the gas and kept on driving. The rain was falling fast, the wipers beat lopsided rhythms in the darkness. The headlights from the head-on cars threw light against the glass, exploding diamonds. We were driving way too fast, running from a past we left behind us. We didn't want to know.
The song Don't Look Down, I get a lot of requests from bands who tour, especially the house concert circuit, because we're located in a really good spot mm-hmm. between some major cities. So I get a lot of requests from bands looking to fill dates between. And I have to tell you this, that when you guys contacted me and I heard that song, that was, you're the first band that ever contacted me that I was like, yeah, we're definitely going to have these guys come down. And it was because of that track.
We should put that on the set list then.
That'd be great. Is there a story behind that song, or is there anything that you'd like to talk about that particular song?
Nathan wrote it, so.
Yeah, it's loosely based on a real experience driving out west, leaving New York and East Coast Boston, where I'd gone to college and stuff, and driving out to chase your dreams, and sometimes you don't want to look too closely or think about it too much, you know? Just kind of want to go. And the line in that song, like walking a tightrope, just keep moving, don't look down, it's kind of, you know, sometimes you just want to go and jump and just know that you'll land
right, yeah.
somehow.
I'm really glad to hear that that's based, at least even loosely, on a real experience, because I was hoping it wasn't a metaphor. It's just, it takes you there, you know what I'm saying? Like, I felt that.
Yeah,
the driving.
Oh,
the
that's real.
Movement.
Yeah,
and so that's cool. You know what yeah. I mean?
And Needles, California, actually ran out of gas a few miles outside of Needles, California. So that's how that got in there.
On your bio and whatnot, there's a lot of talk about the success you had placing some songs in television. Which songs and what shows?
There were actually ones that we specifically wrote for television,
oh,
so
fantastic.
They're not on any albums or anything. But it was for ER.
Days of Our Lives.
Can't believe that show's still.
I know.
Those soap operas, they just go forever.
I don't know how they do it.
Next Big Thing?
Oh, yeah, that was the first one we did. That was for like a country music kind of American Idol show.
And a short lived show called Baby Borrowers. I don't think that one took off.
Baby Borrowers?
Yeah.
I'm a little frightened.
Yeah
you should
frightened.
Be. it was a show where parents lend their babies to teenage couples who think they're ready to have kids, and then they try it out for a while. Reality show,
really,
of course.
Yeah, really.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know how that one even got past. First couple of meetings. Like, yeah, this sounds like a good idea.
Hear the feet stomp the floor, cries of bravo and encore. No one heard her say.
Girl in a Cage has been a song that I've been, it's been really, you know, grabbing me lately. There was a video that someone took, I guess, of a living room show.
Yeah.
A really good quality video. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the catalysts. I watched that video and I was just like, yeah, I really dig this song. I went back to the record and kind of listened to it more. Anything about that particular song, that story or anything interesting?
Well, that was, there's this guy named Ram Dass who wrote this book, Be Here Now, I think in the 60s, and he was kind of a big, one of the first Western, he was educated at Harvard and he dropped out and he went to the East and studied yoga. I don't know a whole lot about him, but I came across a letter that he wrote to some students of his. It was just online, just an internet thing. And the students had lost their daughter in a horrible, violent way. Mm. And it was a letter that he had written to these parents, trying to console them. And it was one of the most beautiful things I'd ever read. I mean, I'm not a a practitioner of it. I don't follow him. I mean, it's nothing like that. It was just kind of came across this beautifully written letter that spoke to the deepest fears that we all have of the inevitable loss that confronts all of us.
Sure.
And I thought it was so profound. And I tried to capture that mood a little bit in the song. The girl in the cage bent the bars and left the stage, you know, there's the soul leaving the body, and the metaphor kind of plays out from there. But the song always fell flat until Becky sang it, you know, and then it was like a song. And like,
it
yes.
is, it's interesting, like we never really suspected, like when you put out a record you're going to have a song or two that you think is going to be the one, but for us that's the song that most people just, they're like, I listen to that song constantly.
And we almost didn't even send it off to Brian to mix it.
We almost
didn't
put it on the
record.
I
don't know about this one, it seems kind of not finished or something. We just felt insecure about it. No one heard her sing.
Here's a side digression, because I'm always curious, especially from independent artists. What are your thoughts on things right now as far as digital music versus CDs and the investment that we have to make into actual compact discs? Do you have any sort of thought on the debates that are flying around right now?
Well, I think it's a really great thing in a lot of ways, because anyone who gets into the music business at this point to get rich is a fool. You know?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So the people who are still here have to be here. Mm. We have to do this.
It's because, we love it.
We love it. And we feel called to do this. We have no guarantee of making any money or of any future or any glory or any fame, nothing. But still we're here, just as you are, Jason, and we're trying and we're writing. And so that means that the music that's out there is better, I think, because it's motivated by something much purer than I want to be famous or I want to be rich or whatever.
Folk record sleeve, Dylan's freewheeling from 19. 19-
You've got a very busy schedule coming up. I was checking out your tour schedule. So does that mean we have to wait a long time for a new Barnaby Bright record, or is there something in the works?
We're working on it.
It is in the works.
It is in the works. We're writing.
We have like three or four brand new songs that have just been written like this year, and then we have about three that have been written since Wake the Hero came out. So, our goal is to have like an EP at least by Christmas, but you just gotta make sure that it's right and that it sounds good, and not worry about when it's gonna come out.
One of the benefits of being indie is we don't have any corporate deadlines.
Right, there's no pressure.
And when we have a great record, we'll let it go.
Yeah.
So. Finally, Desert Island Discs. If you were stuck on a desert island, give me a couple of CDs. You can have as many as you want, three or four CDs that you just have to have with you.
Definitely Patty Griffin, a couple of her albums. I love her. 1,000 Kisses, Flaming Red. Some Beatles. I don't know. I never know which songs are on which Beatles albums.
A lot of people now just say the box sets.
Yeah, okay, box set. I don't know. What about you?
Revolver would have to be near the top. Parsley Sage, Rosemary and Thyme, Simon and Garfunkel. John Coltrane plays the blues. I know it's not a singer-songwriter thing, but that, I'm telling you, is the most perfect expression of the blues I've ever heard. Johnny Cash, Live at Folsom. I just love that record.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's just such a fun record. Iron and Wine, Endless Night of Days.
Oh, me too, for that one. What about, I love that Vashti Bunyan album.
Oh, Vashti Bunyan, yeah, Just Another Diamond Day. That's a great record. Yeah, I can listen to that one over and over. And pretty much anything by Sigur Rós. I'm kind of a huge Sigur Rós fan. Talk, I think, is my favorite one of them.
And you know what? I'm going to say Sufjan Stevens, too. The Illinois album, Welcome to Illinois. I love that one. Every time
Seven
I listen
Swans
to it.
Is pretty great, too.
Oh, yeah, and Seven Swans. I feel like I'm in a movie every time. I walk around New York, and that's going to my iPod, and it's just, oh, it's great.
Yeah. That's really cool. Well, thanks so much for chatting with me.
Sure.
And we're very excited to have you here tonight for a Woodstove House concert. And I wish you all the best in your upcoming dates and on the new record.
Thank you, Jason.
Thanks, Jason.
You too, and all of your writing and recording. May the muses be with you.
Thank you. Around the Woodstove is a production of the Woodstove House with inspiration from the creative works of Lancaster. Our theme song is the old-time traditional tune, Buck Dancer's Choice, performed by Jeff Sims and myself, Jason Mundock. Find us on the web at woodstovehouse.com.
You know, we have a set of bikes. It's a girl bike and a guy bike. But for some reason, because the brake wasn't working right, I end up on the girl bike.